Welcome to the third United We Stand podcast of the season. My name's Andy Mitten, and we're joined today by our special guest, James Scowcroft. James is a former professional footballer, but we've got him on because he's a Manchester United fan, lifelong United fan. His grandfather was from Gorton in Manchester, and he moved down to Suffolk with the RAF, and that's where he met his mother. And James has lived all his life in Suffolk, apart from when he's travelled around as a footballer. And he's done that quite a lot. He started out at Ipswich Town. He played 219 games for Ipswich. Then he moved to Leicester City, where he played 133 matches. 41 games for Coventry City, 83 for Crystal Palace, 26 for Leyton Orient, and 26 for Bury Town, plus another 5 for England under-21s, alongside people like Nicky Butt and David Beckham. So James has played 530 games in his professional career. He's now 36 years old. He's doing a bit of media. He writes a column in United We Stand, and I've known him for a few years, and the thing that struck me about him is he's actually relieved to stop playing because he can start watching Manchester United. And at times James seems to me to be more of a fan than he is a footballer. He loves going to matches. He's watched United home and away since he stopped playing a couple of years ago, and I'm delighted to welcome James to the United We Stand podcast today. Hello, James.
Good afternoon.
United play Southampton. You've played against Southampton many times in your career, and the last time was only a few years ago, wasn't it, when they were in the third division?
It was indeed. It was probably 2.5 years ago now, and probably one of my second last games in professional football at St Mary's as well. I believe Southampton only had the 1 year in League One, third division, as I sort of still called it. And they were far too big to be in the league. I think the crowd was 26,000, 28,000 on an Easter bank holiday as well. So I've seen the rise and fall of them quite a lot recently in the last 5 or 6 years, really. There's no surprise they're back in the top flight.
What's it like to play there? It just seems to be another anonymous bowl, but you can see why Southampton had to move. They were in the Dell. It held 15,000, 16,000. It was cramped. It was ridiculous that it was a top-flight football ground, the Dell. Much as though I loved it for its quirks, it was a terrible place to watch football.
It was, yeah. I played at the Dell a few times as well, really. And I think if ever a club needed to move out and move into a stadium, you know, Southampton was the case. It's OK. I think there's always a good atmosphere. They're well supported. Whenever I've played there, there's always been a good atmosphere there. I'm pretty certain it's still in central Southampton as well, I think just by the docks. The facilities are first class there. I know a lot of the new stadiums are identical, really, and the only difference is, you know, whether they're blue seats or red seats, really. But yeah, it's always a good place to go, and I'm sure United's travelling support will, apart from the distance travelling down from Manchester, will look forward to it.
And what have you made of Southampton this season?
Well, it's still very early. You know, they've lost both games, really. But I'd be surprised if they don't stay up this year. I think they've got a good thing going there. They've got two or three really, really good players. Ricky Lambert is one that I expect to take the Premiership by storm. A little bit like Grant Holt did for Norwich last year. You know, certainly good enough. Certainly has the ability. I think he's got a great goal against Man City as well. So they haven't got going yet, but I expect them to do so. And I don't think it'll be an easy game for United.
What have you made of United so far this season?
They haven't really got out of the blocks, have they? United seem to be notoriously slow starters, but you know, 10 years ago you could lose 6-7 games and win the Premier League. I don't think you can do that anymore. It's almost 3-4 games maximum you can lose, and to lose your opening game just puts them under a little bit of pressure already. I'm sure they'll be there. I'm confident that they can do it. I think Chelsea will be a lot stronger. I think Man City will be as strong as what they were last season, but you know, everyone will be out to beat Man City this year as well, so you know, that's pressure that they'll have to live with, really. But I think United need to get the players back, people like Ferdinand, Johnny Evans. People need to get the injured players back as soon as they can, really, and give it a good go.
What's it like when you play for a team and 4 or 5 of your established defenders are out injured? Does that just cause absolute havoc?
It does. It just knocks the whole team. It knocks the flow of the team. And I think really that is, you, especially when you're, you know, Vidic was out last year, Ferdinand's out this year, really. You're two stalwarts, really. You're centre-half, who you rely on you know, to be 7.5 out of 10 every single week will knock the whole team, and it will knock confidence as well, really. And I think you can see that watching United the first two games. I think you can see that they've missed. Great to have Vidic back, but I think they've really missed Ferdinand so far as well. Just his composure at the back at times, especially against Fulham at the weekend. There's a few nervy moments in the second half when, you know, one thing you know Ferdinand does bring the team is that composure at the back.
I was very impressed by Everton, actually, and I think the fact that they won again against Villa at the weekend shows that they've started well and they've got some decent players. But what will it be like for Michael Carrick? Because I can remember watching him at centre-half a few years ago at Fulham, and United would beat him 3-0. It was a terrible day, it was freezing, it was a terrible result from United, and he just looked so uncomfortable in that position. Is it fair to put him in that position, or should he be able to adapt? Because if you look at Javi Martinez for Athletic Bilbao, you look at Javier Mascherano, they seem adept playing as a defensive midfielder or as a centre-half. Should Manchester United have players who can do that as well?
I think it's modern-day football that you have to adapt and you have to be played in different positions. Certainly now you see it with front players that they can be put slightly wide, they can play just behind the front person or up top themselves, and that should be the same with majority players. And I'm sure Michael Carrick can play in that role. It is just a physical aspect, really, where all of a sudden he's going out and it's a different mindset. You know, Emmanuel Vidic will go out and he'll look for the physical confrontation, he'll enjoy it as well, and he'll look to come out on top. But I'm not quite sure that Carrick will have that mindset in his game, and I think that showed was very, very evident against Everton, where he just didn't want to get involved with Fellaini, and Fellaini, you know, was dominant as well. And then I think that affects the centre half alongside as well. I think he then gets sucked into maybe coming across and trying to do a little bit too much and covering, really. But I'm sure United and Ferguson wouldn't play him centre-half if they didn't believe he could do a job. But to mark someone like Mario Fellaini at set pieces and to lose a goal in the way, you know, he didn't even get off the floor, which, you know, isn't his game, really. It is a little bit mystifying, really, why United and the coaching staff haven't identified that and addressed that.
And why are there so many injuries? Is it just bad luck?
Well, this is something that I've picked up a few times with United in the last year. There is bad luck, but they're also, you can prevent injuries these days. And what they do now, that the players spend a lot of time not training outside, but in the gym. They don't do the weight training that they used to do in the 80s and the 70s. It's all injury prevention now. You know, you won't see players lifting weights like you did years and years ago. It'll be on stability movements, core stability, just everything to have more control about your body, more control that stops injuries. And I'm a firm believer, and I've noticed this myself, the fitter you are, the less injuries that you'll pick up. You'll always get impact injuries, something like Wayne Rooney, you know, he's cut you out at the weekend. Nothing, anybody can do anything about that. But United have picked up too many injuries for me, and it's just a little bit, you know, a little bit suspicious that maybe something more could be done just to slow these injuries down. What goes on in Carrington, I don't know, but yeah, it's just a trend that needs to be stopped.
Does Wayne Rooney look fit to you? Did he look fit to you at Goodison Park last week?
No. He's miles off, which, you know, can often happen to players this time of the season, and I think we've seen it in Rooney before. I think Rooney is up until October, November, when he really gets going and he's fully fit and he's fully focused as well. When I played football, if I was 80% fit, I was a shadow of the player that I could be, really. Some players can do it. Some players can play 80% fit, you know, and you wouldn't really know it's a difference. But I think Wayne Rooney is a player that, especially now, he's not 19, 20 anymore. He's well into his 20s now, that he has to be 100% fit and he has to be at it. If he's not, then I think he's a shadow of the player that he can be. And I think we've seen that. We saw it with England in the summer. And we've seen it with United so far as well.
Is it a slur on his professionalism that he isn't? I wrote a piece a few weeks ago comparing him and Cristiano Ronaldo, who treats his body as a temple, ultra fit, and has improved as a player season after season. You cannot say the same about Wayne Rooney, great player that he is.
Well, you can't, and the two things that will happen there is Wayne Rooney, from up until a couple of years ago, would have just naturally been fit, and he just wouldn't have thought anything else. But all of a sudden now, when you do get older and you do have an injury and you do have to recover, you do have to look after yourself. And football doesn't last forever. I'm sure he'll think this is going to go on and on forever. But in 10 years' time, he'll be in his 30s, isn't it? And it could all be all over for him. Right? So you've got to give yourself the best chance that you can and get the most out of his career. And I think Wayne really probably just needs to. Ryan Giggs has done it. Ryan Giggs has, you know, developed a different sort of outlet. You know, I know he does a lot of yoga and a lot of Pilates and things. And I think really needs to probably learn from himself, really, and learn to sort of realise what his body can do and what it can't do.
Diet as well?
Massive part of football diet now. They say you are what you eat, really, and you cannot get away with eating it. And even if you're 3 or 4 pounds overweight, if you actually carry 3 or 4 pounds of sugar in your hand, you can realise how much that can affect as well. But I'm sure United have got the backroom staff to keep on top of it. Like this day and age now, people, you know, all the United fans will go out and they'll have GPRS training vests on, which monitors how hard players are training. Ferguson and his coaching staff will have someone on pitch side with a laptop saying, well, he's not working hard enough, he needs to work a little bit harder, and it's instant feedback that they can get straight away. So it's all high tech. So there's everything there for to Wayne and the staff to get him in top order.
So why do you get a situation happening like United saw at Everton with Rooney, where he's evidently not fit?
Because he hasn't played a lot in the summer. I think United have had to give him a break because he's gone away with the Euros. He didn't really play a lot for England as well. So he's probably played 3 or 4 pre-season games. And because he's such a key player for United, they've thrown him in. You could see how fit and how up for the game Everton were. And at this time of year, when you know, people don't think in this country, but you still get the warm weather, the grass is different. It's just a different perception, and if you're not fully fit, it will, especially in the Premier League in this day and age with the speed of the game, you will get found out.
You said, Rooney, in 10 years it'll all be over. You are at that stage now, your career has finished. Do you miss it?
Yeah, I do miss it, yeah. I look forward almost coming to the end because, it's your life and it rules your life and everything else, you know, yourself and your family, everything is around football. It's a very privileged position to be in. But in the last year or so, I've been able to do things I've never been able to do before in my life, which is nice. But you do watch your phone, just little things like watching football on the TV, seeing players get off the team buses walking in. Little moments like that you miss more than anything.
You've been there. What's it like arriving at Old Trafford as an away team player?
It's intimidating. It's nerve-wracking. It's exciting. It's unlike any other ground in the country. Literally the tunnel, you can almost compare it to the old Wembley tunnel where virtually the bus can drive all the way into the tunnel. It's so big. The security that surrounds Old Trafford on the match days is unlike any other ground in the country. And I'm not just talking this because I'm a United fan as well. Players and players from other clubs who support other teams as well will say it, that you know, United, as a match day experience for a player, is unlike any other club in the country as well.
Do you enjoy that, though? You know, you're turning up at Old Trafford with Leicester, with Ipswich, with the greatest respect, you're probably going to lose. What's your mindset?
Your mindset is to go out and test yourself, really. That's the biggest stage. You know, I've never played at the Bernabeu or the New Camp, but Old Trafford is arguably one of the biggest stages in world football. So it's what you work for all your life. It's what you kick a ball about in your back garden and dream of doing one day. And when you're there, you have to, do everything. I can remember my first season in the Premier League, and the first couple of months it passed me by a little bit. Excuse me. And there was a few grounds I went to, White Hart Lane, and I got back on the team bus after thinking, well, I haven't really done myself justice today. And whether I'll be in this Premiership just for a year or 2 years, it's a one-off opportunity. And I can remember the first time playing at Old Trafford, waking up in a hotel in Manchester thinking, right, you know, I'm going to make sure when I go to bed tonight that, you know, I don't have any regrets and I've given everything in today. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And, you know, that's the mindset that I sort of took into playing at Old Trafford.
Before you played in the Premiership, you were an apprentice at Ipswich, and I believe you had responsibility for cleaning the visitors' dressing room. So did that mean cleaning the Manchester United dressing room?
It certainly did. Well, my first year when I was 16, being an apprentice at Ipswich, was actually the first year of Sky TV. So and Ipswich had just been promoted into the Premier League, the first year of the Premier League. So it was all exciting. And you know, from being at school and sitting behind the school desk, 4 or 5 months later, you're then, you know, in charge of looking after the away team dressing rooms on a match day and seeing all these stars that you've sort of grown up admiring, really, doing it. And I can remember United coming to town very vividly. And I think it was, you know, the kit man, it was just a massive experience when Manchester United came to town. It was bigger than any other club. The attention was bigger. And quite clearly remember after the game, going into the dressing rooms and asking, you know, the players and the Charlotte folks, and if there's anything they need or anything I could get them. And, you know, they're just little things like that live with you for the rest of your life, really. I think it was actually the following year when United virtually won the league at Ipswich. It was at the end of the season. They beat Ipswich 2-1. And then came down as normal 5 minutes before the end to unlock the dressing room, make sure everything was okay. And it was actually Brian Robson came down at the end. He was obviously in the squad, didn't play that day. And I think United had just won the league on goal difference. I don't think it was mathematically certain, but it was all but done. And I came down and I unlocked the dressing room, and all of a sudden I looked up and this figure in his Manchester United suit, and I thought, God, Brian Robson, one of my old schoolboy heroes. And he said, quite clearly said to me, he said, do you follow Formula One? And I thought, you know, I'm seriously trying to test me out here. This is a trick question. And I said, well, no, not really. He said, well, Ayrton Senna's just died. And he was quite shook up about the experience, really. And I thought, oh, right, that must be terrible. So for 5 minutes of my first ever conversation with one of my boyhood heroes, Brian Robson, we're talking about Ayrton Senna and, you know, the Brazilian Grand Prix, I believe, that he died at. And then 5 minutes later, the United players coming here, all exciting, all slapping each other on the back. And I can remember Brian Robson going around telling everybody that Ayrton Senna had died. And, you know, the mood soon changed, really. But that was a day I also met Eric Cantona as well. I waited patiently for about an hour afterwards, and he was immaculately groomed afterwards. And I came out and had a shirt for him to sign, and he had an overnight bag, dropped his bag, and signed my shirt. I had and as far as an aura, you know, I've met a lot of people, even met some pop stars in my time, but I've never seen somebody have the aura that Eric Cantona had. I'll always remember that as well.
You should watch the film about Senna, about his life.
I've actually got the DVD, but I've never sat down to watch it, really.
Great film.
I'll always, you know, symbolise that moment with Brian meeting Brian Robson as well.
Well, that day as a fan was brilliant because United won the league, but, you know, loads of us travelled down from Manchester. We were in a pub by the river, whatever the river's called in Ipswich, the Orwell, maybe?
River Orwell.
And we dared one of our mates to swim across it, and he did it, and it was filthy. But nearly 20 years on, I look back and you remember the stupid things like that, the bits of sort of the fan culture. You seem to be stronger in terms of your connections with fans than most footballers. You're certainly more interested in it. What did you make of fans when you were playing? And United fans, and, you know, you played for like Leicester when United came to Filbert Street, and were you ever distracted by...
I always used to judge a team by the away support, and I think that's still a good method to go on, really. Especially Ipswich, because it's maybe not for London clubs, but especially the Northern clubs, it's probably one of the furthest away journeys that you can go to. And, you know, Man United support was phenomenal, you know, when it used to come down. And not only did they fill their away end, but it was also all around the ground, every United, you know, people scattered around. Probably more so than any other club, you know, your Liverpools, your Newcastles would always bring full allocations, but there was more Manchester United fans than anything else, and you always remember that as well. Leeds were another big following that would come down, and excuse me. And I think players are aware of that, and I think players often talk about afterwards, you know, great support that their team got, you know, fantastic, really noisy, etc. So I think players would be liars not to say that they don't recognise the support, and especially the away support, home and away as well. It's always something that's fascinated me, really, and, you know, it's been great to experience the last, especially the last 12 months. You know, my football experience has always been getting on a team bus, having a pre-match meal, going to the ground, getting changed, playing, showering. But, for example, going to Anfield last year in the FA Cup, where you're escorted in and you're waiting around for half an hour, 45 minutes afterwards, nowhere to go, and then you've been out, a totally different experience to to what I've been used to the last 15, 20 years.
Your last ever game for Ipswich at Portman Road, you relegated Manchester City, something which would be unimaginable now. You waved goodbye to everyone that day, including the City fans, and got a bit of abuse, didn't you?
We did indeed. I think it was live on Sky as well, really, and we beat them 2-1. And it was actually a little bit of a rivalry at the time because it was Man City and Ipswich that got promoted the season before. We managed to stay up. We finished fifth in the league. But it never happened for Man City, even though they spent big. And I think they got George Ware that came in, Paolo Wanchope. They spent a lot of time. So it was the old, you know, which they still do now, last game of the season, lap of honour. And I think some Man City fans stayed behind to cheer their team as well. And I sort of gave them a little wave, which got responded in words and gestures that I probably can't mention in this podcast.
You've played with a few United lads. You played with Nicky Butt for England under-21s.
Yeah, Phil Neville as well. Trying to think what, you know, there was a few of them. It was that class of 92, really, which was a similar age to me. You know, that's when I came through and United had all the Beckhams and Butts and Nevilles came through, and I was lucky enough to play for England under-21s. And Phil played, Nicky Butt played. David Beckham was called into a squad, but I think he was called into the senior side halfway through. Gary Neville played as well. And it was fascinating for me, really, to all of a sudden, you know, I've always been, even when I played, you know, United fan, and all of a sudden the people that you support, you're actually your teammates, which is a very strange experience, this day. And in this day, I can remember playing Poland at Molineux Wolves. And we met up a week before, and we actually stayed in Telford. And on Saturday afternoon, the manager, Peter Taylor, said, you know, they've got some free time. And a few of us thought we would just go into a local town centre and have a walk around. And it was actually Nicky Butt, Phil Neville, myself and another lad. And I always remember getting into the town centre and Nicky Butt and Phil Neville being recognised. And the time we got back to the car, they had an entourage of 30 people. Something that I've never experienced before and haven't even experienced in this day. And I thought, Christ, you know, that. That's really what it's like to play for Manchester United.
You must have had that in Ipswich.
Yeah, you know, you get people come up to you and recognise you and, you know, want to talk about football, they want to ask for your autograph and a picture, but never sort of somewhere so random.
As Telford,
all of a sudden,
Telford Town Centre.
Two lads got recognised, and then we sort of went along, you know, by the time we got to the end of the street, a little sort of group had been, you know, formed and had followed, and it was just something that had opened my eyes, really, that, you know, and I said to Nicky, I didn't really want to, you know, sound uncool, but I said, does it happen everywhere? And he said, it can do. And they'd only just broken into the first team at the time. They probably weren't the stars that they were 5 or 6 years later.
Yeah. And you'd end up playing against these lads probably a dozen times. What were they like to play against?
Very good players, very, very professional. You know, nice attitude as well, no attitudes between them. They'd always shake your hand, they'd always say hello to you afterwards, and never be any arrogance at all, which you would get with certain players.
Which players?
Certain players around the teams, really. It's probably unfair to me to mention names, really, but other clubs, maybe some certain players at Leeds when they you know, had their good team in the early 2001, 2002, an arrogant bunch of players. But, you know, United were never very, very keen, very, you know, always arguing against with the referee. United were always keen to win at all costs, but as soon as the final whistle goes, you know, always found them very nice. You know, certainly wasn't any prima donnas in that team.
Being a fan, did you not rush to swap shirts?
Yeah, I've swapped a couple of shirts. I've always had a rule myself that I'd only swap a shirt if I won a game or drew a game. You know, I don't think it's right to swap a shirt after you've just lost. But there was an opportunity when I played at Leicester once, and I got Ruud van Nistelrooy's shirt, but unfortunately he just scored a hat-trick, Ruud, and Manchester United completely wiped the floor of us 4-1, and I think we were probably 3-0 down at half-time, and Ruud might have even scored a hat-trick in the first half, and the manager, Mickey Adams, at the time went absolutely mental at half-time, and rightly so. And the last thing he said, right, I don't want anybody coming in this dressing room with any shirts afterwards. He said, just totally disrespectful, you know, they're out there to beat us. And, you know, so as he walked out, I asked before the game, and he said, oh, do you know, and I thought, what am I going to do here? So I got it off him, managed to put it under my top, put it in the kit room afterwards, put it safe, and I thought, right, when everyone's gone, I'll take it home with me, and I'll store that away. But unfortunately, an hour later after the game, went to retrieve it, but there was no Ruud van Nistelrooy shirt, so I was a bit gutted that day.
Who robbed it?
I don't know to this day. I don't know to this day, and I couldn't come in on training Monday saying, right, who's nicked my van Nistelrooy shirt, because I wasn't allowed to, and I could have been fined a week's wages. That was a risk I took. So, and that was probably my best contract at the time, so that's how much a Van Nistelrooy shirt meant to me. But I did get Gary Neville's shirt once. He gave it to me in the tunnel at Old Trafford, and it was a good one because it's got the gold Premier League badge, which you wear if you're the current winners of the Premier League. And I think it was just after the treble winning season as well. So I treasure that shirt as well. As long as I've got about 35 shirts that I've swapped in the past.
You played at 70 of the 92 league rounds. I bet none of the United players can say that.
They probably can't, and I think they'll probably never be able to say it either. Probably have only ever played at 20, maybe 25 grounds in their time in the country. But, no, it's nice, and I've enjoyed playing, talking about your Old Trafford, St James's Park, the Highbury's of the world. But it's also nice to go to a Carlisle, to the Den at Millwall, smaller grounds, which people wouldn't really give the time of the day to, but really good atmospheres as well. I went down to Aldershot last year to see United at Aldershot, and I played there. One of my last ever games was at Aldershot, playing in a reserve team match. And it's probably as run down as what United will ever play at, really. But I thought it was brilliant that night. I thought the atmosphere was superb. And it's just something totally different to your modern-day Premier League, what we talked about going to Southampton at the weekend, where it's all red or blue seats.
You once got invited to Dwight York's birthday party. You were a bit out of your depth, weren't you?
I was out of my depth, and my other teammates was. I do believe we played Blackburn and Huddersfield away in the same week, and we stayed up. We actually stayed at Mottram Hall for the whole week, and on the, I think it might have been a Sunday afternoon or a Monday, we actually went into Manchester Town Centre. And David Johnson played for Ipswich at the time. He was a big part of the United youth team in the 90s as well, sort of just after the Neville era. As we walked around, we bumped into Gary Neville, and I think it might be Nicky Butt as well. And they said, if you're not doing anything tonight, it's like York's having a birthday party in living room. I don't know, but not if it's living room or reform. And I think we were allowed out that night as long as we weren't back too late. And I think everyone thought, right, great, that's where we'll head tonight. So that night we all headed down into Manchester in a sort of Ipswich tracksuits and, Carbrini T-shirts and sort of, rag-ass Rovers, really, to go in there. And the woman at the door say, can I help you? I said, we're here for Dwight's birthday party. She said, I don't think you are. I think you've got the wrong place. She said, no, we've been invited this afternoon. He said, who actually invited you? He said, it was one of his teammates. So she went upstairs, came down and said, are you really at Ipswich Town? I said, yeah, we are actually. And she said, okay, then you can go up. So we went into the room to find it was all a free bar. So I thought, this is great, this is good fun. Dwight actually come over and said, help yourself. And at the time, one of his best mates was Hugo Ekiog. And Hugo actually came over to me and said, here's a free bar, but what we've done with... all putting £100 in. So I thought, at the time, I thought he wanted £100 off the whole group. So I said to everyone, right, I want a tenner off everybody. And everyone whinged and moaned at the time, all this. So I managed to get £100 together. Some of it was in pound coins, loose change, but a lot. We were only Championship footballers at the time, and in a fraction of the kind of money that, you could see was in the room. So I went over to Hugo Ekiog and I said, I've got £100 together now. I said, all right, great. So I gave it to him. And he just looked at me and said, are you taking the mickey or what? I said, is everything all right? He said, no, it's £100 each. And we had an apprentice in our group at the time, and I just said to, I think it might have been Jim McGill, I said, we need to get out of here. We're out of our depths here. We're not in this league. So I think we managed to get out through the fire escape and get back to a hotel, really, without any more being said. That was the difference at the time, and still is a difference. The difference between... the Championship, although there's money flowing around, but the top end of the Premiership now, or anywhere in the Premiership, the money that goes in and out of football clubs is phenomenal.
Coming to the end of our chat, and very enjoyable it's been too. It's the Champions League draw on Friday. Who would you like to see United get grouped with?
Um, something I read about today, really. I just think you have to, you know, United will be seeded, really. It's just a trickier way, trips, really, that the, you know, maybe Russian clubs, I think they can avoid that. Apart from that, maybe your Real Madrid, your Barcelonas, there isn't actually a lot out there to fear, and United have shown that in the last few years. Last year was an absolute disaster for them. I think probably United's attitude last year was a little bit arrogant and thought that they could just walk through to the latter stages, and, you know, at that level now, that how strong that competition is, you can't take it lightly. And I think Ferguson and Manchester United learnt a lesson last year, and hopefully they'll do well this year.
But what about a decent trip, never mind the football? Malaga away in September.
Malaga would be good.
If they get through.
I just think anywhere nice, really. Naples would be good. I think it would be interesting as well, to say the least. I think, I don't know, they're actually in it this year, Napoli. I don't think they are they?
Or a trip to Turkey or Greece is always interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, really. Maybe, you know, south of France. I think if you can get it early on as well, whether the sun is as well, you can't beat it. I saw a lot of United games last year. Obviously not playing football was, you know, gave me that opportunity, and Euro away is on my list to do this year as well.
Let's hope United get a good draw. Thanks for your time, James.
No problem.
And hopefully we'll speak to you later on in the season. Our second guest today is Stephen Armstrong. Stephen is a writer for United We Stand. He goes home and away with Manchester United, both domestically and in Europe. He usually travels on the Monkey Bus. Have you been missing trips to Southampton, Steve?
I have, to be honest. I mean, you're talking to somebody who actually looks and prays to get teams like Torquay and Dover away in cup draws. So, you know, I really like the longer trips. The more fun, I think, you get a better turnout. You tend to get the hardcore there. So I have missed trips like Southampton. I mean, I first went in September of 1982, which was a 1-0 win, and Lou McCarry scored. So it's always been a pretty happy hunting ground for us. So, yeah, I have missed it.
My first trip there was, I think there was one in 90, but one in 91, I remember, because it was the night the Gulf War started, and we paid a lad round the corner. It was a League Cup tie, and jibbed off school, and there was a lad round the corner with a fancy car, and he said, if you can get me 20 quid together, then I'll drive you all down to Southampton and get him a ticket as well. So 20 quid then was enough to get his high-powered, whatever car it was, his high-powered penis extension to Southampton and back. And it was also the A34 had just opened as well, and the M40, I think. So we just flew there and flew back, but it was the night the Gulf War started. Can't even remember the score of the game, but I just remember Southampton away from that night.
Well, I remember that game particularly. It's probably my most vivid memory of going to Southampton away, because you're right, it was the Gulf War starting in that. And what sticks in my mind is actually we drew 1-1 and Mark Hughes scored quite late, and I think we ended up winning the game back home. But what was vivid for me that night is we were coming back home to Oxfordshire. A lot of the aircraft were taking off from like Brighton.
That's right.
Out the Gulf, so it was pretty spooky to see, you know, in theory we were that close to war. And so I remember that really vividly.
And that was, of course, at the Dell. Did you miss the Dell?
I don't miss the Dell because I thought it was an absolute dump of the ground.
It was.
You know, I'm not a big fan of the new modern stadiums, particularly the ones that look like they've come out of the same kit. But at the end of the day, the Dell has seen its day, its best days, a long, long time ago. But, you know, I do enjoy traditional old grounds. Like, you know, I love going to Goodison, I love going to White Hart Lane. But I think the Dell was almost, you know, I think it would have its day. And we never really got anything like a great allocation down there. The facilities were just shocking. So I don't particularly miss the Dell, if I'm being honest.
It had the worst fences ever. I think you travel all that way. I think they used to pen everybody in your way end into like three or four sections with these massive fences, and you couldn't see anything.
I think the thing that season in that cup one, though, that was also, I think that was the year we ended up actually going to the Shea at Halifax, that the Dell was actually a step up, which you don't get to say very often.
That the Shea at Halifax, that didn't even have proper terracing, it was like a mud bank. Remember that one? Yeah. 1990, it was the same year. And another one I remember at the Dell was 92-93, Dion Dublin getting a late winner in the rain. And I think it was our first points of the season. It was on a Monday night, Southampton away.
He didn't last much longer after that one.
No, he didn't. I remember climbing on the fence and just punching the air. And always seems better when you when. I mean, it was brilliant at the time, but there were no problems with the Dell that night. So
well, it wasn't. I think we also forget that. I think we did actually secure a league title there one Easter Saturday. I think it was in 2000.
It was.
So again, I think we've had quite a few. We've won a title down there, and I think we've sent them down as well, going on the last day of the season. So there's been quite a lot of stake on the occasions we have been down there.
Just been speaking to Andy Cole, who was there in 2000. It was the dark blue kit, I remember it, and David Beckham, he took a brilliant free kick. And I spoke to Cole about coming on the podcast, and he's going to come on in a few weeks, and he's keen to talk about...
You go to the game in 1990, where I think it's the season where we only won five games away from home that season, of which Southampton was one. And I remember a lot of United fans being very, very angry about the fact that whilst 3,000 hardcore Reds, you know, were down at the Dell on a Saturday, the FA Cup semi-final tickets for the game against Oldham were actually going on sale up at Old Trafford on the same day, and I remember there being quite a lot of anger that day.
Yeah. And there's, remember the pub, the Milton Tavern, I think it was called, behind the away end, was always full of Reds. Yeah. It was decent. Champions League draw this week. Who would you like to get? You go to all the European away games.
I think you look at it two ways. I think, you know, we look at it primarily for the best trips that you can get out of it. And there's some very, very good trips that look are on there. I think if you put in, first of all, your football head on, obviously you want a group stage that's going to be fairly easy to negotiate.
After last year.
But I think the competition in Europe is getting more and more intense, and I think it's more equal than it's ever been. And I think... I think Chelsea proved that last year. So I think United need to put a lot of what happened last year to bed this year. I think we've got to make a statement that, you know, last year was a one-off or a transition. But I think pot two looks quite tricky for the draw. I mean, I know a lot of it's not confirmed yet, but pot two definitely contains Shakhtar Donetsk and Zenit St. Petersburg. So they could be really, really difficult trips. But I wouldn't mind Benfica or Valencia. Because they're always great trips that get really good turnouts from United fans. I think Ajax are also a possibility, which, you know, after last year's superb trip, we'd definitely love to go back there. And there's a couple from the past as well, such as Dortmund, which was a great trip from 1997. They're a possibility for pot three. I also think Montpellier, which, you know, is one of the most revered trips from the 1991 Cup run. That's also one that could be a possibility for us. So, but the one trip that I think everybody seems to be setting their heart on is the possibility of United playing in Malaga. which a lot of Reds I know are hoping that will come off. I think a lot of people are looking forward to a bit of sunshine first away game. So.
Yeah, well, if that did come off, I think an awful lot of travel, probably the biggest European following for quite a while, aside from a
family. Well, I remember the first European trip started off as, you know, one-day coach journeys, and then people started to venture out doing, you know, sizable city break type of trips. And I actually know people who are seriously considering going to a European away game for a fortnight for Malaga. So I think it would be a massive following without a shadow of a doubt.
Not since Athanaikos away in 1991 have people planned a Mediterranean holiday around a European away game. Let's see if we get Malaga.
I think there'll be a lot of that, and me included.
Thanks for your time, Steve, and hopefully we'll speak to you again later on in the season.
Good on it.
So that's it for this issue of the podcast. Thanks to James Scowcroft and to Steve Armstrong. We're back next week when Andy Cole will be one of the guests. We'll be discussing the Champions League draw and the current edition of United Week Stand, by the way, which went on sale against Fulham, will be in the shops later on this week. All the subscription copies have been sent out as well. Until next week, goodbye.